Cheryl Grover. This recording is part of the Oral History Project carried out by the Suffolk Horse Society in 2013, with advice from Cambridge Community Heritage and a generous grant from the Heritage Lotteries Fund. In the recording, you will hear the voice of Mrs. Cherry Grover describing her memories of the Suffolk Punch heavy horse. Cherry is an expert horsewoman, trainer, examiner, and qualified farrier. The recording was made by Juliet Pennell, who is a member of the Suffolk Horse Society. The date of the recording was the 5th of May 2013, and it was carried out at her home in Yaxley. The duration of the recording is about 35 minutes.
This is Juliet Pennell interviewing Cherry Grover on the 5th of May 2013 at Cherry's home at Yaxley for Working Horses, Working Lives, sharing our stories of the Suffolk Punch.
Right. Well, I'm Cherry Grover, born 12th of April 46, and I've been with horses all my life, practically, although my mother and father were dead against them.
But they bought you a pony?
They bought me a pony when I was 8, dead against their wishes, completely wild, and said that if I could ride it, I could keep it, so I was determined, and so I rode it.
And from the pony, you moved on to bigger horses?
I then had hunters, and then I had a cob, which I then got into driving, and I drove the cob. He'd never actually been ridden, he'd only been driven, so I drove him and then broke him to ride and actually won a lot of jumping competition on him, even though he'd never been ridden. But I used to drive him, and I've driven him in a horse-drawn ambulance at different events and things.
And what about Suffolks? Well, for heavy horses and Suffolks in particular, they came a bit later.
Yes, they came later. When I met Roger, he had some Shires. And then we bought some Suffolks because we thought, well, as we was in East Anglia, we should have Suffolks instead of Shires. And Roger's ambition was to drive a four-horse team, so that's what we then decided to do.
And your first four horses that you had, can you all...
That's a long while ago. Rupert, I can remember buying a foal Rupert. He was, bought him off Clifford Earl. He was one of our best Suffolks we have had. Then we had a gelding called Beckton, who was another really good Suffolk. And Beckton was the first gelding that we ever won a prize with at the Woodbridge Show, because nobody would put Mr. Saunders down. So Philip Woodward at the Woodbridge Show put Beckton in front of Mr. Saunders, which didn't go down very well with a lot of people. But he was a really good gelding. And then we had four geldings. Of course, I can't remember all of them then, but Rupert and Boxer and Duke and Count and a lot.
And you broke them all in...
Yeah, we broke them all in ourselves. They then went to... And then we started to do a bit of farm work with them, and we ploughed the land, and we used to go and plough all day. And mates from who, in those days, there were still chaps alive who done a lot of ploughing, and we'd have sometimes 3-4 pairs ploughing all day.
And how much land were you farming with the horses?
We ploughed about 80 acres every year, all through the winter, and then did spring work, and then, you know, grew potatoes and mangle for the horses, and grew barley and oats. And
everything was done with the horses, the harrowing.
We didn't have a tractor, so everything, if we wanted to do a job, then the horses had to do it.
Wow. And so bringing everything in from the fields,
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, cut it all with a binder. We used to cut the corn with three horses on the binder, and then three horses at home. We used to be on the binder. That's the hardest work for horses on the farm, the binder. So we used to have them on for about 2 hours, then take them off. They would go home, and then three more would come and go on, and then, you know, 2 hours, those other three would come back again. So they had a break.
goodness. So three horses on a binder, but yeah, a pair on a plough? Would you have
Yeah,
had
they're a pair on a plough, 10-inch furrow, and you plough roughly an acre a day, but you're hard-pressed to plough an acre a day. But it was quite light land where we were. It actually took us 3 years to get our land back, so that was nice to work with horses. It was panned down a bit, and very hard. Once it got, back to how it should be, then it was lovely work with the horses. There is nothing better than ploughing with a pair of horses.
And how many, what was the most horses you had in the stable at any one time for working?
We had about 16 at one time when we had a show to six horse team, because you have to have spares and that. And then, but they used to come and go. But what we used to do is go out and buy all the colts that we could buy. So a lot of these 16 horses were young horses as well. And we'd buy all the colts right off the mother. And bring them home, put them in yards, or winter them out as long as we could, and then put them in yards. And then at 2 year old, they were all broken in as entires. And then we would see which ones may keep as stallions, and then we'd keep them and cut the others. And they would go to work, and then you keep working them, and then some would, the best ones we'd keep for the team. And the other ones would just go to work or sell them on to go to work.
And did you break horses for other people as well?
Yeah, I did break horses for other people. And we broke a lot of horses in Shires, Persians, Clydesdales, riding horses. And we always had 4 hours to be broken for other people. It's seriously hard work, very dangerous. And the trouble is, when you do it professionally, people will send you horses that they've had a go at, and then they say, oh no, well, the clerks will break that in, we'll send that. And some of them weren't too easy, but we managed to get through, and I'm still here to tell the tale.
Did you work the stallions once? You said
all the colts were broken in, yeah, 2 year old, and they all worked. Yeah, they were just broken in and did very light work. And then they were turned away and got back at four and see which ones were the best. Honningbeck Henry was a classic example, because we had him, we bought him, and then at 2 year old we kept looking at him and think, I don't know, I don't think we ought to cut him. And then Adams wanted a stallion at the time, so they bought him as a 2 year old to keep as a stallion. So that's how we used to go on, keep the best ones and cut and work the other ones.
But you had stallions yourself.
We bought Roe Edge Count the second, when poor George Colson died. We wouldn't have never had him if poor old George hadn't died. We bought him as a 2 year old at the Roe Edge sale. That was a funny episode, because the auctioneer, it was a dispersal sale, and the auctioneer ran him up and then kept running him after we'd dropped out, and thinking we'd come in again, and then got landed with him. So then he was in a serious muddle, because he hadn't actually sold him, and that was a dispersal. So then we came after us, so we got him sort of worth the money, and we took him home. And of course, he was supreme champion for 5-6 years. He was absolute beautiful horse, the best, and he got struck by lightning, which absolutely broke my heart.
Yeah.
When he was nine, he got struck by lightning.
So, a huge amount of work, working the farm with the horses, breaking horses, and looking after the horses.
Yeah, we had, in those days, you trained girls for to work with horses, and when they came to you, the government gave you a little money, and then they went one day a week to college, and then they came and did work experience with us. So that sort of helped. So that was the mundane work got done, getting the horses in, grooming them and all that sort of thing, because when the horses were broken in, we always had, most days we took them out twice a day, because I'd only got 6 weeks to break them. So they used to come to us raw, And in those 6 weeks, they had to go in chained single, both sides, on the pole, both sides, and then in shafts. So
in 6 weeks.
In 6 weeks. And there wasn't many that we didn't have more than 6 weeks.
Yeah. And you were working as a farrier at this time, doing a bit of farrier.
Yeah, we were shoeing horses. Shoeing was our main living. Horses, I'm afraid you don't make a lot of money. Shoeing was our main living, and Roger then took his exams and got the fellowship of the Worshipful Company of Farriers, and so we set up a shoeing business, and I used to go around helping him. And in those days, the Suffolks were shod with bevels. Most Suffolks were shod with beveled shoes, and we used to go on a few days before a show, put the set of bevels on, and then polish them all up, take hours to do the job. And then after the show, we used to go on the Sunday or the Monday after a Saturday show and take the bevels off and put the flat shoes back on again, and a set of bevels would last the horse all season, going on and off when they showed, because nearly everybody showed in beveled shoes when we first started.
And what were the horses' feet like with the shoes on?
Well,
and off,
you know, they did suffer a bit, but you know, they weren't shown like if they went to the Suffolk, perhaps the shoes would stay on again by the Norfolk, because that wasn't long, you see. So you know, you didn't want to wear your bevels out, because they all used to be handmade. I'd be striker, which is on the sledgehammer. And then, and they were all hand beveled, so that was a serious amount of work. And all his shoes were polished and raffed, but we took a pride in it, and because the Suffolk Society brought out the thing with, you know, classes for the best feet, and there was a £2 prize for the farrier, which was a lot of money. So we used to try and win that. And it was pride to win the best feet.
And do you think it helped improve the Suffolk's feet?
Oh yeah, there aren't many Suffolks today with bad feet, and they were known for bad feet. They were known for shelly feet, and they used to crack and break. But there aren't many Suffolks like that now. That has improved the feet.
Yes. And when you talk about winning the foot classes, but with your horses, what sort of things did you show your horses?
We showed them in hand, and we did single pair 4 and 6 horse team, and we did show them 4 at length. We did that at the Royal Show just as a sort of demonstration, and we actually went round the Royal Show ring. And we didn't lead them, and we didn't drive them. That was all done by word, with a whip over the crest. And you tapped it for going right, and you tapped it the other side for coming left.
And what, in terms
and
of...
Talk to them.
Talk to them. Yeah. And with a working... If you were working horses, you'd use 4 at length for what sort of jobs?
Well,
when you're working
them? Mostly 4 at length were pulling big timber jobs, where they really needed strength to pull heavy timber out. That's what they were mainly used for. But this was just purely demonstration. We had a big load on. We had George Paul's wagon, and we loaded it actually with corn. So it did make them look like they were working. So that was good. That did look good.
And if you had 4 abreast, I know you said that you'd shown 4 abreast, and in a working context...
Well, you had 4 abreast. We used to do quite a bit of work with 4 abreast at home, and you'd have a big, wide gang of harriers behind them, and so you'd get over a lot more work. I mean, you could do 20 acres with 4 horses, you know, with a really big, wide gang of harriers behind them. But and as the saying is, it's better to have one extra horse and keep going than have lesser number and have to keep stop and resting them.
Yeah.
So we had 4 and we had the horses. So we used to have, you know, do a lot of 4 abreast, and we used to do we used to spread the muck with a 4 horse team. And that was school of horses for the team job as well, you see. So standing about. I think this is one thing that's missed today. People say, you used to do all this, but our horses were actually worked. And so when they went to a show that was really nothing to them, they knew the job, and they'd have been at work in teams at home, and you know, in tandems, and you know, where we had big loads of bales and things, where we'd have one in shafts and one in front, and they knew the job.
So when you went to the shows, you were able to put them into some special sort of the London bus you mentioned, and the Pantechnicon, where you were putting horses that you'd worked into another situation, and
they didn't seem to worry about it at all. I mean, when I look back now, I think to myself, I must have been absolutely crazy, because one job I used to do was the Lord Mayor's show in London every year for Coleman's, and we was there once standing behind John Parker, and this band got on the top of the bus. And I looked round and I said, "Are you intending to play this this band?" "Oh yes," he said. I said, "Well, you just hang on a minute, mate," I said, "because I don't know whether these horses are going to put up with this band." It was the drums, it was everything. So I said, "You just go steady when you start that up." Anyway, they start up. By the time we'd got round the Lord Mayor's thing in London, it's quite a long way, they didn't take any notice at all, and they were full force with this band, and it's unbelievable really what they will put up with.
But have you had any times where things haven't gone quite right?
I've been lucky really I haven't had too many times that when I've been out with the horses, luckily, when things have gone wrong. I did have once where the horses got hung up and pulled the bridle off, and I'd got a load of children on, and they did take off, and but that was in London in a big park, and I was lucky where there were some trees, and I managed to guide them, and they stopped, and I jumped off and got the bridle back on, and away we went. So I was lucky, but that doesn't always happen like that. I've had some horrendous accidents at home, breaking these horses, but I've been lucky when I've been out with them.
And you've been to some pretty special places with horses and done particular things.
I did four abreast on the Harris doing the musical drive, which I did, you know, quite recently at Spectacular. And we had four abreast, Young's Brewery had four abreast, and we actually did a musical drive. We led it, and with 10 pairs behind us. And we led the musical drive, and we did that for the Queen at Windsor. We stayed at the Royal Mews at Windsor. Very luxury it was. They were in stalls. The horses were all tied up in stalls, tiled mangers, tiles all around them, brass pull-out bars at the back, tap for every horse. Very luxury it was.
And you stayed in the Royal Mews as
well?
Yeah,
we stayed up in the you know, the sleeping quarters above the stable. So that was quite something. That really, you know, it was lovely. And we did the musical drive in the dark, you know, under floodlight for the Queen. And one thing which heaven only knows why, but she requested that all the horses at Windsor were taken down to the castle, not braided, luckily, by 6 o'clock in the morning, not braided, but driven down as they would be in the musical drive. So I had to have mine at four abreast, nothing behind them, but we just drove them on long reins, and we had to drive past the castle, and the Queen waved at us from the castle, and then we went back. That's her request.
And you've taken, I mean, you've done other big shows and special events. I think you mentioned Olympia.
We've had the horses at the Christmas shows at Olympia. I did Dick Weddington there with Rupert in a tumble. And then we had a 6-horse team at the Royal International at Birmingham. And we did a sort of demonstration with Samuel Smith's 8-horse team. And that was, and we also had a horse in a tumble there. So for a week at the Royal International Birmingham, that was flat out. We went in the ring twice with a 6-horse team and twice with a horse in a tumble. for the whole week, and that was just flat out.
Yeah. And you've been, I think you've been in a film as well, or worked advising on films?
We've done quite a bit of film work. We did Aikenfield, and then we did a lot of work with Dick Joyce, Bygones, years ago when Dick Joyce did the Bygones programme on East Anglia. He came down ours a lot and did the Harvest film and Bygones films, and he came down and put a lot of what we did in the archives that didn't actually go out on the television or anything, but he just had it for posterity, really, and like taking the binder to pieces for the road, to travel on the road, and then putting it back together when it's actually worked on, the cutting the corn and all little jobs and ploughing and everything, and it's all in the archives.
Because you were working your farm with horses, yeah, in the traditional manner.
Yeah, and he and Dick Joyce didn't want it lost, which was, you know, wonderful.
Lovely, yeah. And I think you also said you'd taken a horse to Ipswich Town
yeah,
football.
When, I don't know when it was, year it was, when Ipswich Town won the cup, took Roehedge Count to, I had to lead him round the football pitch, and they all went mad because they didn't want him to go on the grass, their precious grass, and he got bevelled shoes on, and the team was walked behind him with the goalkeeper on the shoulders, and we walked round, and that was just unbelievable because that horse, he did dance about a bit, but he was okay, and there was toilet rolls and things flying about, and he was really wonderful. Yeah, he was good. I mean, the thing, and I also took Count to Wembley, who represented the Queen at the Sandringham Estate when he was Supreme Champion of the Suffolks, and I went in the arena then, and how you simulate these things, because I walked into the arena pitch black and then 6 floodlights come on him. You cannot simulate that at home. There's nothing you can do. And that's the same as when I went to Olympia with Toby and Richard on the bus to do the Christmas show. I mean, we went in there and we had to walk around where they have the bus. It was bands, it was everything, and then polystyrene came down as snow, and again you go in pitch black, 6. How do you simulate that at home? You have to have trust in your horses,
and they have to trust,
and they did it. Unbelievable.
So with this multitude of horses over the years, you must have had sort of ailments and problems with them. What would be, would you,
yeah, we did, we
work
did.
With them yourselves? Did you have any sort of tips you'd picked up perhaps from other people, or have you found your own methods of curing them?
Well, you find your own methods, but you I mean, there was a lot of books about then, weren't there? We did have, you know, you learn and you read these little books that all these horsemen used to have, and I do know one story which was actually in the book Horse Power Magic, because Giorgio at Evans used to come down now quite a bit, and he'd sit like you are now with a microphone and take all this down. And I did have a case where I was out with a horse and it stopped and it wouldn't go, and I couldn't get it past this spot, and then when I went out a stoat had killed a rabbit. Now that they say if you get the rabbit and you get the liver out of the rabbit, the stoat paralyses the rabbit, you see, and it does something to the liver, and you get the liver out, and you do this and you do that with it, and then you can do anything with a horse. And that's the same sort of thing with the frog's bone. Now, that's a myth. I don't know, you know, but I did try that out. You get a frog's bone, you put it in an anthill. I didn't actually do that. And then the ants eat all the flesh away and you're left with the bones. Now, you put them in the river and one bone will float upstream. Well, I did all this, and to my amazement, it didn't actually float upstream, but it stayed where it was. And they say, if you take that bone and do this, that and the other with it, then you can do anything with a horse. But it did, in actual fact, stay where it was in a running stream, which is quite eerie, really.
Yes. You wonder how they thought these ideas up.
Well, they do,
place.
Yeah. And, you know, we found potions and we did have a lot of oils and things that we used to, used to use on the horses, and that some work, some don't. We did, in actual fact, we did feed a bit of arsenic to our horses as poisoned, but poison to horses, poisons are the best tonic in a very mild way, and arsenic would make the coat shine.
And what else would you put? I mean, I've seen you with, you do your wood flower on the legs.
Yeah, that's really a Shire trait, where you wash your legs and but also rinse them all out, and then you dry them with wood flour. And that makes the hair, scalds the hair, and it makes the hair very white. Bone dries them so you won't get cracked heels and that sort of thing. And I still use that today on my hunters and that, and that does dry the hair.
Yes.
But that's the Shire boys, you know, they make their white legs.
White,
yeah.
And what about the harness? I mean, keeping all the harness in top
condition. Lucky with the harness. We bought this, you know, we got a hold of our harness that was so expensive and in those days, and getting the harness together was a nightmare, and we wanted to show a team. The first team we showed was actually in double shafts. We had double shafts and two trace horses in the front. Which we soon found out that the horses in the shafts didn't go as well as the breeries because they felt sort of a bit tied in. So we thought, well, we best go over to a pole. So we went, we then changed over pole, which then you need different type of harness. And our set of harness that we managed to obtain it mainly because a woman had this set of harness and she wanted a filly that we'd got. So we did a swap. But that was double shafted harness, so we had to Mann's Brewery packed up, and we was able to obtain some of their harness, and so we made up this. It was completely matched, and six horse teams had a harness, and which was Brewery harness. The shafted harness was actually pre-war. It was all made before the First World War. And it was in a bit of a state. And keeping your harness tip-top condition is seriously hard work. And, of course, in them days we had chrome. It was all chrome chains. Now it's stainless steel. And when you have chrome, you've only got to have a wet day, or you take your horses down by the sea and your chains are rusty. So you have to clean them every time you use them.
Golly.
It is hard work, yeah. Yeah, it is hard work. And, I mean, I did a lot of advertising work with my horses. I was out somewhere nearly every weekend doing carnivals and fates and jobs that people want, you know, giving rides and doing, like, the Lord Mayor's show. And did a lot of carnivals in London, opening pubs for breweries. I drove horses for Watney's, Mann's, Truman's, Shires. I did the Lord Mayor's coach in Norwich for 3 or 4 years, driving Watney Shires, picking up the judge from where he lived, taking him to the cathedral, picture up there, taking him to the cathedral where he was then blessed to give good judgment, and then I drove him on to the courts to do his job and then drove him home. Did that for 3 or 4 years. John Parker now does that with a four-horse team of light horses.
Probably very difficult to say, but could you say perhaps what you enjoyed the most? I mean, was it the farm work? Did you enjoy? What would be...
Well, I was lucky, really, because all the year round, I had something to do. we did the work and the horse all winter, and I hunted. I was master of hounds, and I hunted, and... I was master hounds with the Essex and Southwark for 15 years, so we hunted and we worked the horses all. winter. Then we got them sort of ready for the shows, and then I started travelling. I did love travelling over around the country, meeting all different people, staying all in different places. I used to go to Somerset, Wales, Yorkshire, all over the country, doing advertising work for all the breweries. And it's nice when you drive, you know, you one day you'll be driving a pair of Shires, the next day you'll be driving a pair of Suffolks, and then perhaps a pair of Persians. And it was nice just to do all the different jobs. And then, of course, I travelled a stallion. First we had Count, and then we had a Shire stallion off the society, Shire Horse Society. And we used to have about between 40 and 50 mares come to the two stallions. So that was a serious amount of work. And so I did a lot of stallion work. And then people, you know, couldn't get the horse mares to the stallion. So I said, right, well, we'll travel him. And I used to travel all around Norfolk with Count, and, well, Roehedge Alpha first, and then Roehedge Count. And nothing to cover up to 7-8 mares a day, going from one farm to the other. Now they worry if their stallions cover two mares. And we used, you know, we and then we'd have mares to fold down for people, and then they'd come to be fold down, and then you get the mare back in foal again.
But you didn't breed many foals yourself.
No, because we bought all the colts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yes, in those days, you see, nobody wanted the colts, a little bit like today, really, I suppose, but nobody wanted the colts, so you could go out and buy colts for very little money. And of course, in them days, there was the meat trade, which is gone now, so you could go out and buy colts knowing that you're not going to lose serious money, because if they didn't come to it, they would go for the meat trade if it, you know, if they didn't, weren't right, or, you know, they didn't make the job or anything like that. I mean, our geldens, when they'd done, you know, when they got old and they'd finished their work, they would make up to £800. So they were actually worth more dead than they were alive.
And that was useful.
Well,
useful
very,
money,
yes, you... very, because you weren't going to, you weren't going to go out and buy all these colts, because some aren't going to make it.
Mm.
I mean, you know, you go out and you take the risk and you buy the colts, and some won't make it. But you knew you had a fallback, where that trade is gone now.
Mm.
Now, if you ever lose, you know, horse's got to be put down, you have to pay very nearly. But that was a good, that was another job I did. I used to take a lot of horses to the knacker man's, for people who didn't want to have their horses put down, and I would tell them that I would make, you know, I would see them shot and put down, and, you know, they knew that, they trusted me to know that the job was done. It's another job I've done.
Done a huge number of jobs. Well, it's been fascinating hearing about all your stories. Is there anything else that you can think of to tell us, to record, or any particular memories or ideas?
Well, one of our best achievements was winning the team championship at the Royal. We did it with George Paul's wagon, and we went there and won the team championship. And you've got to remember, in those days, we was against all the breweries, and there's none now, but in those days there was a serious number of breweries. They were all breweries. And those men are paid purely to produce a four-horse team for that brewery and show it and win. And we won it in 84 with four Suffolks. And we went the next year, and we won it again. And then we went the next year, and that was a bit tough because we wanted to win it. And all 3 years, there was Shire man judging. We weren't lucky enough to have a Suffolk man judging. We had a Shire man judging. And the third year, we was really keen to win it 3 times. And, you know, we go, the breweries gave their shows, and then we went out, and I did say to Roger, go on, let them go, we got nothing to lose. And when they went down the straight, the crowd cheered, because they really did go well, because Roger could drive a four-horse team. And we pulled in, and we were pulled in first, and Graham Ward was judging it, and I said to him, I didn't think you'd do that. He said, I had no choice. So I thought we had won it fairly and squarely, and because that'll never be broken, because the Royal Show is now finished.
That is a wonderful
achievement. Yeah. That just did bring a tear to my eye when we had the cup for that. That was wonderful, yeah.
Oh, well, Cherry, thank you very much indeed for telling us these stories and allowing me to record them. So thank you.
You're welcome.